Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Hi, folks. It is 12:01 Pacific on the Sunday after the NHL draft, June 25th. It's been a few months, I believe, since we had our last JewelCast, and it's definitely the first of the offseason. So we've got a lot to catch up on. We'll be talking for at least an hour today, and after that, we'll see how we do. I am joined by Sarah, who I believe should no longer be on mute. Sarah, are you there?
I hope I'm here.
Yeah. There was a strange noise right at the beginning, and then it sounds like you're all good. So, how are you doing?
I am good. I have experienced the draft in Chicago, and it is over, and now everyone is leaving.
Yes, that sounds about right. Thanks again for taking the time. We'll start with that, I guess, without too much intro. So how was your in-person draft experience? Was it your first draft?
It was the first time I've ever gone, and I mainly went because I was really looking forward to booing Gary Bettman in person, and so it really lived up to all of that. It was just really interesting to see, you know, like how many people actually come to a city for a draft. Like you see it on television, but you don't really like realize how many people literally just go travel just to see a draft. And like, it's not like the, oh, I want to go see my team pick Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid. It's just like, I'm a fan from Nashville and I came to Chicago to watch us draft a kid. So it was just real cool. Like I ended up like making friends with a guy behind me who's a Jets fan and was probably the only Jets fan in the building. So like just the amount of people who just come just for the fun of it was kind of surprising to me, because it's not the most thrilling of ways to spend a couple hours, unless you're there to boo things.
Right.
The fact that people make road trips to go see this was really interesting.
That's very cool. Yeah. And, I've only been to one. I went to the Los Angeles one in 2010, and I think, having it in sort of a destination city helps a lot. I was in the New York, New Jersey area the weekend that draft was happening in 2013, although I didn't go. And, you know, L.A., New York, and Chicago, you're going to get a lot of visitors either way.
Right.
And, it's a cool experience. And the booing actually got some mixed reviews from Twitter and from the universe, because Chicago kind of got off to a weak start until Bettman egged them on.
Yeah, I mean, he called us out on it. I was like, you can do better than this, Chicago. Like, I know you're excited because the draft is here, but, like, this is your one chance to boo Gary Bettman. Like, take it with, like, your whole heart. And, yeah, I was kind of sad that he had to make us boo him louder. But the way that he enjoys it, I'm like, he's, like, completed the transformation into the guy who likes being booed at. Like...
I think it's a very positive development for the week in general.
right. And Detroit's GM also, you know, cracked a smile whenever the very lengthy "Detroit sucks" chant happened. He was trying to keep a straight face, but eventually he cracked. But that's only in Chicago kind of thing.
Yeah, and I know was there a strong New Jersey and Philadelphia presence there with the them expecting to get their generational type player?
I didn't really see too many. I saw a handful of Philadelphia jerseys roaming around, a couple of New Jersey ones, but it was really scattered, the group. Like, I saw a kid in a Jonathan Quick jersey and I was like, who are you? Like, come be my friend. Like, it was pretty scattered though of who actually came in.
Yeah. And I guess they didn't have Edmonton's time to plan ahead like Edmonton did for the last few years.
Yeah.
A little surprised by the whole development. So I guess then let's talk about the Kings, because obviously Jersey and Philly, you know, two of the big winners of the draft, they get Nico and they get Nolan. But the Kings at number 11 were not expecting, I think it's safe to say, to have Gabriel Vilardi fall to them. John Rosen mentioned that he hadn't done any research on him whatsoever. He was gone, I think, by number 7 of the SB Nation NHL mock draft, and that was like kind of surprising that he made it to number 7 of that one. But the Kings got some help ahead of him. New York took a bit of a reach at number 7 with Anderson, the first Anderson of the draft. And then the Red Wings took Michael Rasmussen, who a lot of people thought the Kings might go for at number 11. Do you think there was any option other than to go with Vilardi for the Kings at that point?
No, I mean, this kid was one of the ones that they trotted out for the, like, we brought these 5 top prospects to the, you know, Stanley Cup and everything. And he, you know, Vilardi went to the Cubs game and was with, like, Nolan Patrick and them throwing out the first pitch. Like, everyone thought this kid was going to go. I didn't know anything about him because it didn't. I was like, well, I don't need to know anything because he's certainly not going to fall this far down in the draft. And then there he was. Like, yeah, there's no. Yeah. I think the deficiencies he might have in his game, he can work on. And we've certainly, and I think, you know, they said skating is one of them, and they've certainly turned around other guys who have not been great skaters. So I don't think that's a concern at all.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at the rankings, NHL Central Scouting had him, I think, 4th overall, at least among maybe North American skaters. TSN had him 5th, ESPN, Corey Pronman had him at number 3. He was, like I wrote in my draft preview that, or at least in the live thread, that, wow, this guy's available after the first 5 picks. He was consensus top 5, and then teams just kept passing on him. Do you think right now, like, we're going to do our top 25 under 25 as we usually do, probably in August or September. Right now, knowing what you know about him, where do you put him in the Kings organizational depth? Is he already immediately the Kings top prospect?
Probably, or if not top, like very close. Like, I'm just trying to think of who we even have that I think is close enough to making, you know, not, if not an immediate impact within a couple years. Like, I'm sure he's going to go back to juniors next year, but after that, you know, we could probably certainly use him. And it's actually good. It's fairly good succession planning for, you know, Jeff Carter's not going to get any younger. We still don't really have a 3 or a 4 center that has really commanded the role. And if he ends up being that kind of player who can really just jump in and elevate his game to the NHL level, like, great. Like, please come. We need some help.
Yeah. Right. And we don't know, what the Kings' plan is maybe past the next year or two. I think it may have been one of our Jameses, either Jay Zaris or JJ, was discussing how, from maybe the more pessimistic point of view, the Kings might have 2 more years with this current window, with this current core, before they really have to start making tough decisions. And whether or not that's the case, it's a really good opportunity for maybe at least 2018, 2019, or the year after. Vilardi, apparently a lot of scouts are seeing him as a wing because of the skating or the less, you know, the less dynamic sides of his game. If you want him to play wing, you can stick him on the top 6. If you want to ease him in maybe as the third line center with some heavily sheltered minutes, that seems like a good place for him in his rookie year. He fits the Kings style really well. And even if you expect the Kings to take a bit of a downturn, in a couple of years, there's a good opportunity for him to come and succeed.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he fits exactly in with what they kind of typically want from their players, you know, very defensive minded, and that's not going to change under John Stevens. That's still going to be this team's identity. I'll be interested to see, you know, I'm sure he'll stick around for a few preseason games at least. I'll be interested to see how he does there. You know, it's never exactly top competition in the preseason, but you can get a pretty good idea of what he's going to look like just from, you know, especially if it's like if they send him to the China games or something. I'm sure that the teams are going to be sending, you know, actual players that people are going to want to watch. So he could have a chance to show off what he's got against whoever is on the Canucks that's not a Sedin.
Yeah, yeah. Who would that be?
I have literally no idea who else. Yeah. I mean, in the Canucks, like, highlight package at the draft, they kept showing Brandon Sutter. And I was like, why? Why am I seeing so much of your, like, third line, maybe, center? But, yeah, I would be real hard-pressed to name many non-Sedin Canucks, I think.
Yeah, and I'm looking at a little info on Velarde. It looks like before the draft, he skipped the lower body portion of the fitness testing due to some soreness in his right hip and back, which he played a full season in the OHL. He played at the Memorial Cup. He had a knee injury back in August and an appendectomy in November. So it's interesting because his stock, I think, actually rose over the course of the season despite all those injuries. Or
yeah.
Ailments, maybe. But whatever it is, it does seem like really good fortune.
Absolutely.
So that's the first round. The Kings, of course, did not move the pick this year. They didn't trade up as they may have considered in past years. And, of course, they didn't need to because they got the top five prospect. And in the second round, they got another player who maybe was expected to be gone by that point. He was kind of coming in at the end of the first round of a number of mock drafts, and that would be Jarrett Anderson-Dolan, who went 41st overall. So before we get to the story, because it's a really, really cool story of his upbringing and his journey to the draft. He's a 5'11 center, so another good, solid center, but maybe a little bit of a smaller frame than a lot of other Kings prospects. Do you think that this has anything to do with an organizational change, or do you think, again, they just saw a talented prospect they didn't want to pass up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they saw, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I did say that on my write-up about Anderson-Dolan on the blog, and then took some heat in the comments for allegedly perpetuating the can't teach size thing, which now people are arguing whether or not it's true or not. Regardless, you know, the Kings' image has been that of a large team. I mean, Mike Richards and Christopher Stieg have been the smallest people on the team for quite some time. You know, it's not a team that has traditionally had a lot of smaller, like, players of that size. And so just the fact that they, you know, saw someone who was still on the board who had an amazing year last year, a real, like, breakout year in his performance, and went for it and didn't, you know, hopefully, like, didn't second guess, you know, the size, or, you know, is he going to be able to put on enough muscle or weight or anything? They just took him and didn't wait to see if he was going to drop any further. I hope it means that they're kind of recognizing that they don't need, you know, 12 guys who are all 6'4" and are just going to push you around. Like, that these smaller, kind of speedier, craftier players can definitely can contribute to the team.
Yeah, and the comment that I am looking at does mention Jordan Wheel. It does mention, you know, the Spencer Watson, Brandon Cozen, Justin Acevedo, guys who went a little bit lower in the draft, although I think Wheel was a third rounder. So at least some of those guys fit into the sort of the, yeah, take the flyer on the guy that scores at a really high level in juniors. And like, I mean, they signed Brian O'Neill too, to an AHL deal, and he won the AHL, either the regular season, the playoff, maybe both, MVP and led the league in scoring. So, but it is, I think, the highest pick that the Kings have had since maybe Oscar Moeller, who gets brought up here as well, who was a second rounder almost 10 years ago. But that one of the higher forward picks who's maybe a bit undersized. So it is an interesting idea, and especially for a center.
Yeah.
So that's the on ice skinny with Anderson Dolan. Another two-way player, the NHL Network guys were joking about have every prospect now is describing themselves as a two-way player, whether or not they fit the bill, just because that's the way the league is going. But he does look like someone who has played in, as you mentioned, played in all situations, who maybe plays a little bit bigger than he is and has the defensive side of things on lock. But let's talk about the rest of the story, because this is what a lot of folks were talking about after Anderson Dolan. Do you want to give some background?
Sure. So Jarrett Anderson Dolan is from Calgary, and he was raised by his mothers, Fran and Nancy. And he, you know, this is the only family he has had. They, you know, so for him, it's that is this is what his family is. And, you know, there's an amazing article that I linked in the piece I did on the blog, and I think we also tweeted about it from the Spokesman Review from Spokane, kind of talking about his family and his hockey career and everything, and just you know, that he does get some crap on the ice for it, and that he, you know, his draft rating in the WHL kind of dropped a little bit, and there's, you know, speculation that, you know, teams passed him over because they didn't want a player who had two mothers. And so, like, I was real excited when the Kings picked him. Like, I was actually very pleased that I didn't have media credentials and that I was at home watching from my couch, because, like, I didn't have to be professional. my cats sure. did not care how excited I was. But, you know, both from a player perspective and, you know, a kid who is, you know, every article about him talks about just how, like, committed he is, how, like, driven he is, how great of a, like, leader he is on his team. You know, he helped, you know, put together his team participating in the, you know, Hockey is for Everyone, You Can Play Night, and just is really, you know, everything I've heard about him, he wants to be able to be a voice, you know, to, you know, say that, like, my family is normal. This is not, you know, something that should be a big deal in the year 2017. And the comments that came out from the scouting director, Mark Iannetti, were just amazing. You know, a few people quoted him on Twitter, and he was basically just saying, if you would have not picked this kid because of his family, you need to have another job. Like, you just need to get out. And so to have someone who represents my team come out and say, like, this is just a kid who was raised in a loving family, and they made him be the good person that he is today. And that there's nothing wrong with that, or that we should care about from a hockey perspective. I was like, this is exactly what I want to hear from my team, is that it doesn't mean anything to them other than that he's a good kid with a good family, and he's going to be a good player. He definitely is a good, hopefully going to be a good, like, character guy, a good leader in wherever he plays at. So I'm pretty excited about that one.
Yeah, it's a really special story, and I do recommend reading that Spokesman Review article from Spokane about his story. I think his mother is actually met at a hockey rink or playing ice hockey, which is a really great twist on the normal or the traditional story there. And Mark Iannetti said, one of his other quotes was, "I would hope a non-traditional family is considered a traditional family now." And like you said, if he's a character guy by every traditional sense, he was a captain at the under 18 World Championships, the captain of Team Canada. So if anyone does pass on him for that reason, it's pretty baffling. But it's a very cool story. It's a good opportunity. I saw a few Kings fans on Twitter talking about how this this pick and more importantly the words from Yannetti were really encouraging, especially for a team that has had trouble dealing with the Slava Voynov his assault a few years ago, and with off-ice issues. They had their first Pride Night at Staples Center last season, and maybe this is a another step in sort of bringing some fans back who've been a little bit disillusioned. But regardless, it's a really, really great story, and hopefully we do get to see Jerry Anderson Dolan as a key figure in this organization and for the Kings for a while.
Yeah, today he's still in Chicago per his Instagram, and he has gone to the Chicago Pride Parade with his family, which is happening now. And there's been a lot of talk on Twitter. There always is around this time of year of teams that will send their front office, or they'll send their mascot, or they'll send a couple people who work there. But they most teams, aside from Braden Holtby, who's gone for the Capitals, and Andrew Ference went for up in Edmonton, not a lot of teams ever really have a lot of player support or visibility at any sort of events like that. So a couple of my friends earlier were discussing, like, maybe he'll be the king in the future who goes and represents the team at an LA Pride Parade, because he obviously is, a kid who would do that. And so it would just be really great to think in the future that we would have an active player, representing the organization and just helping put a face on, the fact that it's not just lip service, that, we actually do mean hockey is for everyone and things like that.
Yeah. And Dustin Brown and Alec Martinez were among the first NHL players to make a video for You Can Play back in 2012. And Dustin Brown, especially, has always been, he's multiple times commented on his support for the LGBT community. So it would be really, really special to have a kid like Anderson Dolan who can help sort of, continue that evolution in thinking in the game. And with Robbie Rogers being the first, I believe the first male active pro athlete in one of the quote unquote big four, big five pro sports leagues,
right,
and playing in Los Angeles, it's another opportunity. So,
I think it's a great city for him. Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just saying, I think that it was a great pick, from our perspective, and that, Los Angeles is not a city that is going to, as a whole, ever really be, dismissive of his family or how, important this is to him. I think that from just sort of a cultural perspective, that LA is a good fit, even taking hockey aside.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's hope that the organization absolutely gives him the right foundation to succeed. And I think they will. They will. With the rest of the draft, I have it on in the background now. NHL Network's replaying it. Montreal just took the kid from St. Cloud State, Ryan Poling, who I was hoping somehow might drop the Kings in the third round or something, just to really build that pipeline. But other than that, I don't think there were too many outright disappointments for the Kings. There were a couple picks which were seen as reaches. The third round pick was, I believe, the fourth goalie taken in the NHL draft, and he was not. It was Matt Vallalta, I think I have that pronunciation, and he was not expected to go all that high. So maybe the Kings jumped ahead a little bit for that one. The defenseman Cole Holtz, who is bound for Penn State in the fall, wasn't on too many draft boards. He was a little bit off the radar. But, you know, as you get into those lower rounds, you can explain away something that might be considered a reach a little more easily. And who knows about goalies anyways? So I think it was a pretty successful draft. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm intrigued by the goalie. I was just glad we selected a goalie at all because we have nothing in the pipeline anywhere. So even if he just turns out to be okay, he might make a great Ontario Reign goalie. Who knows? And, you know, he's a kid that they said that he basically was a walk-on with the Greyhounds and got a starting position. So he's definitely someone who apparently knows how to just come in and take over a game. So I'll be interested to see what happens. But yeah, I don't think he was on anyone's radar as a goalie that would go that early. And I think there were probably several goalies that they passed over that other teams were really excited about that, you know, ended up falling to them. I feel like the Marcus Phillips, the defenseman who wants to be like Drew Doughty, was kind of an interesting pick. I was projected to go a little higher in the draft and kind of slipped down to us. So seems like he could be a little bit of a project. From everything that I saw, like sometimes he gets a little bit too like, let's go wandering about, or I'm going to chase this guy and abandon the position I'm supposed to be in. But you know, he's also a kid, so, you know, they could work that out hopefully. I feel like everything that I've been reading has, you know, when hockey writers have been saying who kind of won and lost in the draft, that everyone's been really impressed with what the Kings walked away with. So, you know, a couple of these guys might be reaches, but, you know, we didn't pick eight guys who are reaches. So that's an improvement.
Yeah. And just to touch on the other two picks before we move on to the other draft that took place last week, Mikey Anderson was the first pick in the fourth round by the Kings, and the first defenseman they drafted, described as a poised, consistent player. He's an NCAA bound defenseman as well, going to Minnesota Duluth, so he fits the mold perfectly. If Matt Green hadn't been bought out and the Kings had maintained their current seven defensemen, they could have had, I guess, five out of the seven who came from the NCAA. So definitely an organizational trend in the past there. And like I mentioned, Cole Holtz, also an NCAA guy. And then the last pick that the Kings made in the fifth round, number 138, Drake Rimsha, another forward. He's from Michigan initially, but playing in the OHL. And again, another guy who maybe has some offensive upside, maybe has a little bit of work to do, but he had a really strong second half of the season in the OHL. So a good worthy project to take on, I think. Although, again, another guy who wasn't ranked that high on most draft boards.
Yeah, most of the highlights I could find of him were him fighting people. So I assume eventually we're going to need a new Jordandy Nolandrioff, and maybe he will fall into that role. Who knows?
Yeah, and I think that might be the first time we've had that little portmanteau spoken out loud. So it's going to catch on. I just know
I had to think about it.
Yeah. It doesn't really roll off the tongue yet, but Andy Andreoff back for two more years. We'll go through the other Kings news, I guess, before we jump to the expansion draft. So Andreoff re-signed yesterday for 2 years, just above the minimum. I think he was a restricted free agent, a total commitment to having him on the team next year, but locking up the guy at a lower price. Matt Green bought out, I think officially, within the last 2 days after that knowledge was sort of, spread the week before, chances apparently that he may become a scout for the Kings in the AHL, specifically the Pacific Division, which would be a cool little landing spot for him, especially since I've, among many others, thought that he could be a potential coach for the Kings, whether in an assistant level or at the big time in the future. And, of course, Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson in recent weeks becoming the first restricted free agents to re-sign with the Kings for 4 years and 3 years, respectively. So so nothing too out of the ordinary aside from maybe the departure of Matt Green, where he hung on, and I think, a lot longer than a lot of Kings fans were expecting him to. So,
yeah, I feel like every year, yeah, they're like, are we buying him out now? Are we buying him out now? And this is the year, apparently.
Yep. Yep, so be it. And it's been a pretty good almost decade for Green, all things considered. So if we turn now to expansion and to Vegas, Braden McNabb ends up being the King who departs for greener pastures, except it's Vegas. So there's not a whole lot of green there. And he's already being sort of trotted out as one of the faces of the young franchise, maybe just because he's from LA. He's familiar to some of the Vegas Kings fans, but also maybe he's an older, younger guy, so to speak, someone with some NHL experience. And I retweeted some of the pictures from the Jewels account the other day, but he's flying in a helicopter and he's taking pictures in front of the Vegas sign with Marc-Andre Fleury, and he's having lunch with the first Vegas Golden Knight ever, Reed Duke. It's a good opportunity for McNabb to succeed. Were you at all surprised to see him be the one who was taken?
No, I mean, I feel like, you know, we all had the sort of momentary panic of like, what if they don't take McNabb? And what if they steal Trevor Lewis from us or something? But, you know, I think ultimately they seemed, you know, just based on every projection that McNabb was going to be it. I thought it was really curious to see that they immediately just pushed him into this role of, you're now one of the faces of this new franchise. And, you know, he never would have had that opportunity in Los Angeles. He was never going to be the guy. So, you know, a cool opportunity for him, and then see if he can, you know, I feel like everyone on the site always goes back and forth over, is he good? Is he bad? We just don't know. He'll definitely have the opportunity to, you know, if he wants first pairing minutes, he might be able to take them and see what he can do with them. I feel like we have a lot of defensemen who are all kind of at the same points in their career. Him and Derek Forbert are kind of, you know, similar, and, you know, we have the new guys all coming up that, you know, it'll be a loss and we'll have to retool around it, but not a surprise. And I think one that they've probably been planning for as soon as they understood really what the expansion draft was going to look like.
Yeah, and opinions were extremely split among the readers and among the writers over which King might be the worst to lose or the best to lose. I know the readers voting did not want to lose Trevor Lewis, which makes sense from a consistency perspective and a fan favorite perspective. I know that a couple of the writers, yourself included, were very against the idea of potentially losing Nick Shore. And I know that earlier this season, there was a lot of concern about losing Nick Dowd. I think that eased itself a little bit over the course of the year. But I think McNabb might have been the best option to lose purely, like you said, because it was the expected outcome. And now you assume that the Kings have some sort of plan to replace McNabb, or at least to give Paul Ledoux and Kevin Gravel and even Forbert those larger roles. So what would you say would have been the worst outcome? Do you think it would have been losing Nick Shore?
I'm trying to figure out if me saying yes just makes me like a weird Nick Shore homer. Like, because him and Nick Dowd
they were all on our team. They were all
like,
on our team. You can be a homer however you want.
Right. I mean, I already was like ready to fight people over like Nick Shore's perceived honor as an NHL player. I think he's a player that like most people don't notice, which is probably good for what is asked of him. But, you know, I think that, you know, John Rosen pointed it out at one point that whenever he went down with an injury, the whole complexion of that bottom six just changed. And, you know, they weren't necessarily as effective as they were before. And for whatever reason, you know, he ended up being a guy that kind of held it together, but just didn't, you know, hasn't really been able to excel offensively the way that I think people would like him to. If we lose him, like, I know they kept trying to, you know, they put Adrian Kempe at center a little bit. I don't know. We don't really have a ton of center depth, I think, that is ready to come up and make an impact and be trusted in the sort of more defensively minded roles that we ask the third and fourth lines to be in. I don't know that you want to put an AHL, a guy fresh from the AHL, you know, out against other, you know, having to take faceoffs on, you know, right away. There's just very little organizational depth of that role. So I feel like maybe next year, like, you know, it would be fine, but I feel like for right now there needs to be some kind of consistency in that position. And losing, you know, him or Nick Dowd, who, you know, like I said, is basically the same player, just a little older, would create a bigger hole to fill than, you know, everyone planning on losing, you know, Braden McNabb and kind of having a plan in place already for it.
Right. I think on the center depth, I mean, the only guy really down in Ontario who looks like he could make that leap anytime soon is Mike Amadio. And he's a scorer, scored 50 goals in the OHL, but is he ready to take on that defensive role? I don't think so. So it's a good outcome on the bottom six front, like you said. And shout out to all of the writers, Derek, Jay-Z, and JJ, and Carlos, and Robin, for taking some various perspectives on that and arguing with our commenters and with each other in the comments. It's without going too far into the whole embrace debate thing that ESPN and Fox Sports seem to love. It's cool to have that.
Just some gentle opinions.
Exactly. It's nice. So that's where that goes. We'll see if the Kings decide to address their long lost defenseman as July 1st approaches. what are your other takes on Vegas? They got a number of draft picks, including our mock draft choice Nick Suzuki at number 13. They also got Cody Glass, a big center, with their first ever draft pick. And they, you know, swept the floors of a lot of other teams with taking draft picks and also guys the other teams didn't really want anymore. So, what do you think of their approach?
Yeah, I think that they did really well at the, you know, the normal regular draft. A lot of guys who aren't going to make an impact right now, but, you know, they have a pretty strong pipeline already for the future. That team is going to be okay just because of Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, some of their lineup selections in the expansion draft were a little bit of reaches, or they didn't always necessarily take who people projected them to be selecting, but, you know, people can argue all day about, is Marc-Andre Fleury good? Is he bad? Is he, you know, you can, yeah, anyone you ask is going to have a different opinion. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that he's ready to embrace his new role, you know, being the face of this new team. And he's still a good goaltender. So I feel like as long as someone on that team can score some goals, which is maybe the biggest problem, I think they'll at least be, they're not going to be last year's Colorado Avalanche. They're probably going to get more than 48 points or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I think it's just been fun to watch this unfold from the perspective of someone who wasn't really paying attention the last time expansion rolled around with Atlanta and or Minnesota and or Nashville, any of those teams. So it's I think it was the right approach, at least the draft pick approach was a good one, considering all the flexibility Vegas had to make those deals. Maybe I'm a little surprised they didn't take advantage of the free agent route as much as they could have, the exclusive negotiating windows, but they got a couple guys through that, including Las Vegas native Derek Englund. So it wasn't the worst outcome for him.
Yeah.
My only disappointment
that
is that they yeah.
Like I was scrolling through their roster and I'm like, well, he's, you know, you can think whatever you want of James Neal, but like, if he's not their leading goal scorer at the end of the year, like something may have gone wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. If he's not, then maybe they did get 48 points.
Yeah. Yeah. I also forgot that they got Shea Theodore from the Ducks. So we don't have to see him anymore.
Yeah, the Ducks scramble was really interesting. My brother is a Ducks fan, and he was pleased that they managed to find a way to protect Sammy Vatanen and Josh Manson, as I think a lot of Ducks fans were. But that defenseman pecking order has changed so much this year over the course of the season. I don't think anyone would have been too fussed about losing Manson last season. He's, I think, 26 years old, so a little bit on the older end, but he was really impressive. Vatanen was the guy that a lot of people were expecting might be gone. So they did some negotiating there, but Theodore is a pretty good pickup. Other than you know, Manson and maybe Brandon Montour, who is the fastest skater in the world, at least from what I've seen of him personally. it's still, I mean, getting any of those young defensemen for Vegas was a pretty good pull. And it sounds like they have zero interest in trading Theodore. They got, rumor has it, they got multiple offers for him and said basically nice try.
Yeah.
Now we also got the schedule out. I guess the Kings get two Vegas road trips this season. The only team they have to play five times is Anaheim, and every other Pacific team there are four matchups. So it's I think we put up a post earlier, but they're both on the second night of back-to-backs, I believe. So you're going to have to be a little creative if you want to see the Kings in LA and in Vegas.
Yeah.
That
seems a little rude.
So then I know. I'm really disappointed. I thought that there would be some nice off days in between, a little bit of time to enjoy ourselves. But there is a Sunday matinee, so that's nice of them. Let's see. We are moving right along. Let's just very briefly, I think it's been talked out quite a bit by this point, but let's talk about the move from Sutter and Lombardi to Stevens and Rob Blake. The early signs for management, at least, have been pretty encouraging. The Toffoli and Pearson contracts, I think, both came in below where people might have been expecting. They haven't, they kept the pick. They made some smart draft choices without overthinking anything. And, they're set up, you know, maybe not as well for the future as, they have been in past years due to the pipeline, but they're set up to at least contend for a couple more years. What are your early impressions of the front office?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's been interesting hearing all the quotes coming out, like, of people being like, well, if Dean Lombardi were here, this conversation would be going for about an hour. And just, you know, the kind of different approach that kind of the front office takes of, you know, not having to overanalyze everything and not overthinking it and not turning everything into a like fall of Rome analogy.
Sure.
But, you know, it's good that, you know, the contract extensions with, you know, Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson didn't take forever and nothing started leaking out about things being contentious or you know, the sides not being able to agree, they just got it done, which at the end of the day, that's what I want. I just want them to be able to, you know, to figure it out and not potentially like alienate or anger, you know, the future of your team. You know, I think that, you know, it was a little bit inevitable that this change all happened, but everyone seems to really have a great perspective on, you know, we're not burning the whole thing down and starting over again. You know, it's not going to be a radically different team with a radically different approach, which, depending on who you ask, is either a good thing or a terrible thing. And I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, and that ties into John Stevens being next coach of the Kings. While it's certainly encouraging that the Kings didn't just go the route of hiring someone who's been fired 3 or 4 times by other NHL teams, as well as, you know, that may have worked in the past. They did take a current assistant who obviously has coached under Daryl Sutter for a number of years now. So the expectation that the Kings might do a total 180, I think, is out the window and was out the window very quickly. But there are thoughts that John Stevens is going to be able to at least find a little bit of offensive creativity and open things up just a touch while retaining the same defensive structure, which sounds like the best possible option. But we don't want to see the Kings necessarily get caught in between the two styles and have any confusion.
Right.
But the discipline, I think, should be good this season.
Yeah, and like just from, you know, from even just the perspective of someone who comes into LA every so often, and when I'm in town, I, you know, try to go to a Kings practice or two and just, you know, just watch and take pictures and everything. And inevitably, every time I would go, John Stevens is one of the last people on the ice, and he's always talking to like one of the young defensemen or who, you know, whoever isn't going to be playing that night. And like just being able to watch him on the ice with the team, like I feel like has a very like hands-on approach, and, you know, seems to get along with the players. You know, doesn't just like yell at people and then wander off or anything. So, you know, he's already a guy that's built up a good relationship with the team, and hopefully, you know, whatever feelings the players have about the departure of Daryl Sutter, if they're happy about it or they're sad about it or whatever, you know, that continuity of having someone who already knows you and already knows, you know, maybe what it's going to take to get the best out of you, I think will be a kind of good, easy transition into this next coaching era.
Yeah, and if you're not a team that's looking to do a total rebuild, then the coaching hire makes a lot of sense. If things don't work out, if you're 2 or 3 years out and you still haven't won another playoff series and your core is getting real old, then that's when you really hit the reset button.
Yeah.
But this, you know, as we've been going through our 2016-17 in review series, the first, I think, 10 or so entries, maybe more, are, of course, up on the website. We'll tweet them out later. You can catch up. It's great reading. And we, you know, the Kings really, they're not broken, right? The general consensus 2 months after these sweeping changes, there's been, of course, lots of heat thrown on both Sutter and Lombardi. The general perception that a Daryl Sutter coach team is, in this era, not going to score enough goals. The perception that Dean Lombardi maybe is putting too much stock in his old core when he needs to start looking more to the future. And there's, you know, whatever the debate has settled on, it's settled on that the changes need to be made. But this is still a team that led the league in possession last year for whatever that is worth at this point, and that dealt with injuries throughout the season, including one to Jonathan Quick, which, as well as Peter Budaj, played for the first 3 or 4 months of the season, certainly had an impact on the team. So there is some pessimism within the fan base. I've seen someone from the Hockey News, I think, tweeted out yesterday that he thinks the Kings are now the 6th best team in the Pacific Division after the changes that Arizona made and the Calgary trade for Travis Hamonic. And I just don't think that's a little excessive. But
yeah,
we've got two more months to wait to see how the Kings look in the preseason and how that changes.
Yeah, I think that just you decide how much stock you want to put in rumors, but the rumors that filtered out that like players weren't happy and they were just kind of going through the motions and whatever. Even if you don't believe that, just watching them all season didn't look like a team necessarily that was going to figure it out. Years in the past, the first year the Kings missed the playoffs, like the joke on Twitter was like that the playoffs were going to start and the Kings were just going to rappel in and then like win the Stanley Cup because it was the Kings. Even in years past, like just the eye test as it is of watching the team, like it just looked like a different team. It felt like a different team that, all season you're like, they're not going to get over the hump. They're not going to make it. I'd like to think that maybe this sort of shakeup bringing in maybe some new faces, might kind of help revitalize, if players weren't happy or if they weren't, like at the end of the day, this is a game. It's a kid's game that like giant men play with like knives on their shoes. It should, they're making $1 billion and they should be having fun at it. And if they're not enjoying it and if they're not in an environment that is going to make them succeed, like, what are we here for? So I'm hoping that shaking things up a little bit will kind of get some drive back in people to really see what they've got left and see what they can do.
Yeah, and I think that's the most valid eye test analysis, that this just did not have the feel of the 2015 team that missed the playoffs, where no one really believed until game 81 that they weren't going to make the playoffs. This season, everybody believed it long before game 81, regardless of, numbers and whatnot, which if all these teams played the 2016-17 season again, I think the Kings, in most of the seasons, are still a playoff team, but I can totally understand the changes that were made. And, going forward, it's hard to see where the Kings fall in the Western Conference hierarchy. Like, I know better now than to think that the Kings will ever finish ahead of the Ducks in the division. Edmonton, if Connor McDavid is healthy for an entire season, it's hard to see the Kings finishing ahead of them, although that's very possible. So you have to think that the Kings are going to be fighting it out with the Sharks and with the Flames, and maybe if they have a really good season with the Oilers in the standings, which doesn't necessarily guarantee a playoff spot. Let's hope we don't get bitten by the injury bug again. Let's just say that.
And I feel like it's interesting, like especially being someone who's lived in the Central Division, for so many years, the Central was what controlled everything. And, the route to the Stanley Cup goes through the Central Division. And, we may start seeing more that both wildcard spots now go to Pacific teams if Arizona really gets their act together. And for every, smart move they make, like, three other moves that really confuse me. So I still don't 100% understand the Coyotes. But if they get their stuff together, that's a lot of Pacific teams that are all competing for spots, and they could, Vegas is going to be good, but they're not going to be a playoff team. I doubt it. So teams can playing Vegas, four or five times a year might be a easy pickup of points for other Pacific teams to pad the stats a little bit. So I think it's conceivable that the Western Conference kind of knocks off the Central is, or the Pacific knocks off the Central is the one that controls the wild card spots.
Yeah. And we'll see how that pans out. But before any of that, we get free agency, and the salary cap is apparently going to be increasing to $75 million, which is, of course, a jump from last year. I'm looking at cap friendly, the indispensable cap friendly The Kings have almost exactly $10 million of cap space heading into next season. And that includes the Matt Green buyout money, which is $833,000 for the next couple of years. The Mike Richards termination fees, if you want to call them that. And they have 17 players locked down. Kevin Gravel, Nick Shore, both restricted free agents, both, I imagine, certainly coming back. And Jerome McGinley, the only outstanding unrestricted free agent, who I don't see coming back, but, you know, there's room now. So what do you think the priority is in free agency? They need a backup goaltender, but do you target forwards where we're still talking about who can play with Andrei Kopitar, or do you go straight after defense because of the departure of McNabb?
You know, I'd want to focus on forwards because I feel like even with the departure of McNabb, you know, this team's focus on defense, I don't think is going to change. And, you know, if Jonathan Quick is healthy and we make him play 82 games, if we can't find a backup, you know, this team's problem has always been that they don't score a lot of goals. And so I think the defense, even without McNabb, will still be okay. But, you know, trying to target a reasonable forward or try to find, you know, this year's version of Sam Gagner to, you know, someone who other teams have kind of written off. And, I mean, although we tried that with Teddy Purcell and Devin Setoguchi, and that did not end well, but... It'd be interesting to see what else they can dig up. I don't entirely know who is out there on free agency who would be. I mean, Justin Williams needs a contract. Just putting that
out
there.
Don't get my hopes up.
I mean, if he wants to come home, we'll take you, Justin.
I still wear the jersey. I still have the jersey. It needs a wash. It'll be ready to go on opening night if he's back. I don't know. I think with the defensive situation, looking at cap friendly makes you freak out immediately because you see that they only have it enlists only four defensemen under contract. But Kevin Gravel and Paul Adu, I forgot to mention, also restricted free agent. They fill out a six that I think the Kings probably brought out at least on one occasion last year, and that they might be comfortable bringing out on, you know, the majority of nights. But it's, you know, the Kings will find someone on the $1 million defenseman train to provide some competition, like your Ehrhoff or your Gilbert. Gilbert, not awful in limited doses last year, but clearly a seventh defenseman type. And the competition is again going to be a little stiff for that last spot. The Kings have a number of tweener defensemen. They've got Zach Trotman, who they signed last year to a little fanfare. They've got Oscar Fantenberg, who they just signed out of, I want to say, Sweden. And there are options for players who have been in the system for a while, like Zach Leslie, Alex Mantuniemi, Curtis McDermott, to maybe be impressive in training camp and steal a spot. But up front, that organizational depth, there are enough players under contract to field four lines right now, assuming that Nick Shore is signed. But, you know, in addition to Adrian Kempe, who's going to make the jump next season. Brodzinski looked okay in six games. Dare I say, looked good in six games. But expecting him to play 82 games next year is probably a bridge too far. Michael Mersch is still waiting for a real opportunity. Justin Auger is very tall. Like, they definitely need somebody else. But yeah, the free agency pool is really not impressive, and that's think just a symptom of the current system where 90% of the guys who could be available that would make some headlines just get snapped up before they hit the market.
Yeah.
Every guy who's making more, who made more than like $5 million last year is in their 30s, except maybe for like Kevin Shattenkirk. So I'll just run down a couple of the bigger forward names. My favorite possibility is Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau, because it would explode
that would be beautiful.
The entire city.
None of these names look good to me.
No.
Yeah,
there's,
I mean,
like Patrick Sharp had 18 points in 48 games last season. Alexander Radulov is maybe the most productive name, and not somebody who the Kings I think ever would have signed a couple years ago, but is as out there. Jerome McGinnell, of course, is unrestricted. And then you've got, like, I mean, scrolling down, Brian Gionta, Brooks Knight.
We could get Shane Doan.
Does anyone want
Shane Doan?
And that's an almost realistic possibility, which is just fascinating to me. But yeah, it's like they're going to have to either find a Jerome McGinnell, but for a whole season, which good luck with that, or they might have to be a little more creative.
Yeah. Yeah, God, none of these names are just, it's literally Justin Williams and some dudes.
Yeah, yeah, and Justin Williams is a good dude. We'll see what the Kings' outlook is, and maybe we'll hear some more rumors in the next week or so. I think everybody's been so occupied with that team in Vegas that there hasn't been a lot of chance for the rumor mill to pick up in the same way it has in past years.
Yeah.
So that's the outlook going forward for the Kings. I'd be stunned if they didn't try to get both a forward and a defenseman, but they've got room for maybe one big ticket guy, maybe two if they're medium ticket guys, and we'll see what the plan is. I think the only other real change on the Kings side that I haven't mentioned yet is the new play-by-play man. And I don't know how much Bob Miller you get out in your neck of the woods or have gotten in past years, but the new guy, Alex Faust, who I believe is actually driving out to Los Angeles right now or is going to be in the next couple weeks, if his social media is to be believed, is the new 28-year-old man in the booth. Any thoughts on the hire?
I usually watch the Kings game on the Kings broadcast, so I have definitely gotten my share of Bob Miller, and I have inherited my share of Bob Miller feelings from all of my lifelong Southern California friends. So I was out in LA at one of the last home games, and my friends and I actually ended up literally almost walking directly into Bob Miller. And my friend that I was there with has spent many, many years in Southern California and many years as a Kings fan. And she basically like stopped short because Bob Miller was right in front of her, and I spilled my beer all over her back, and Bob Miller goes, "Well, now you're covered in beer." But just getting to see up close and personal, like how good he is and how gracious he is to every fan. Like, there was a huge crowd of people around him, and he stopped and made sure that he took time for every person who wanted to talk to him, take a picture with him, share words with him about, you know, what he's meant to them over the years. So just getting to see that in person was, you know, really a testament to how great he is and how missed he's going to be by, you know, the Kings fan community. And so listening to the games over the course of the year with Jim Fox and guy who isn't Bob Miller, I was real curious to see what they would do, because there were definitely some people where I was like, people whose style I didn't like, people who you could tell just didn't really get on with Jim. And if you're going to be sitting in a box together for, you know, the entire hockey season, you know, covering games, I think you definitely need to be able to develop a rapport very quickly. And so I was pretty excited to hear, in articles I read talking about the selection, that they had him come in and do a test with Jim Fox, and that everyone felt that, you know, right off the bat, they got along. They were able to work together very well. I really liked the tape of his of other games he's called before. Like, you know, he doesn't get he just presents the game as it is. And, you know, Bob Miller's shoes are impossible to fill, but it'll be interesting to hear like a younger voice, a different voice. But it'll be good to hear. It's a very under the radar pick, but I'm kind of glad they went with someone who didn't already have an established presence, especially in the market. Just a whole new era, really.
Yeah. And someone who seems to be willing to engage with the fans and to get out in the community a little bit. It looks like, according to his Twitter, that he'll be coming out to California in the next week or so. Although he did get to have either lunch or dinner with both Bob Miller and Vin Scully. So he's hopefully not feeling the weight of crazy expectations yet. but he joins Joe Davis, who I think is also under 30, and is calling games for the Dodgers. So a cool little 1-2 punch of announcers in the LA area who maybe will be here for a long time. We'll see what he brings to the table. And Jim Fox, as you mentioned, will be sticking around. So it can't be that big of a transition, right?
I hope not.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as he pronounces everyone's names right, that's fine. Like, every time I watch a game and they clearly haven't, whoever the play-by-play guy clearly hasn't done any research into how to pronounce names, you know, as long as we're doing that, all right, I'm fine.
Yeah, and Bob Miller, whatever occasional mix-ups he might have had with numbers, because 71 and 11 look really similar on a Kings jersey. He always made sure he got the pronunciations right. So I think then we are kind of getting to the end here. So upcoming events, of course, July 1st is free agency. We are going to resume our season in review features after the free agency dust settles a little bit and after we're done with some more draft analysis and the inevitable follow-up to now that the Kings actually have lost Braden McNabb, what do we do? And after that, we'll have more review for you. We'll have the 2017 edition of our top 25 under 25 years old with, of course, some new faces. And then we are getting closer to the preseason. The preseason schedule is out. The Kings will be playing in Vegas and in China. They'll see Vancouver and Anaheim a few times apiece, as well as Arizona, and then the season. But we're just about a little less than halfway through the off season, so we will definitely be back after July 1st to talk free agency and talk about who the Kings hopefully added to their roster. Anything else that I missed, Sarah?
I think we're good. I mean, we could spend another half hour just like talking about Justin Williams. I think that'd be okay.
That's true.
But...
That's true. Maybe we'll have some bonus content. I don't know if we want to record that live because it could get embarrassing.
I mean, no one. We'll keep it between ourselves. We'll just cry over Justin Williams. It'll be fine. You can say it was me crying. It was okay.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Well, Williams. Okay, we're gonna end the podcast now. Thanks for joining me. I hope everyone who listened live on a Sunday afternoon enjoyed it. I would say that we're on iTunes and Stitcher, but if you're listening to this, you clearly found a way to listen. So thanks again for tuning in to our first off-season podcast, and we will have more on the Kings as soon as the Kings bring us more to talk about. Thanks again.